listening to the Forza Podcast with your host, Marsh.
What up, what up, what up? It is the Forza Podcast. It is a beautiful day on God's green earth. It is Friday, May 15th. The sun is out. The birds are chirping. The angels are singing. We're talking Canes football. It's Marsh. And as always, I am joined by my wonderful producer and co-host Jordan Nelson. Jordan, Jordan, Jordan!
What's up, dude?
Nothing much, man. I'm freaking psyched as hell about this show. I'm ready to talk some football.
Yeah,
dude. It might not be football this year, but we're still going to be doing this. I'm ready. We have a huge show for you guys.
Yeah, it should be a good one. We got three really good guests. Two of them have been on before, and then one of them kept me up till 5 a.m. last night, so arguing about Michael Jordan and LeBron with me, but
that was classic. That was classic.
It was. All right. So should we dig into our first guest?
Yeah, let's bring on Tito.
Cool. I'll give him a call right now.
Hello?
Yo, yo, Tito, what's going on, brother?
What's up, man? How are y'all?
I'm doing pretty good, man. I'm doing pretty good. So we welcome on our good friend Tito. This is his second time on the show. Tito, how you holding up, man? How's quarantine?
Quarantine's good, man. Quarantine's good. Trying to get in a lot of gaming, obviously, but not trying to stay on my feet, trying to keep my head in the right spot and stay active when I can. But no, it's been good, bro. It's been good. How about you guys?
Jordan, you want to answer first? Because I don't want to set a depressing tone for the show.
Pretty much the same thing for me, man. I mean, what games are you playing?
A lot of Warzone, man. I've been getting in a lot of Warzone.
All right. I'm partial to Apex Legends. So I've been playing the Apex Legends. And then I got a computer game that I play a little here and there. And then, but pretty much the same thing, man. I watching Netflix and playing some Apex and drinking a whole lot of Mountain Dew.
I feel you, bro.
I don't know what the hell Apex is or Warzone, but,
You know what Warzone is.
Madden, and I'm not very good at it, but Kay, I want to ask you something right off the bat, Tito. Actually, two things, because you tweeted about two things today. First, you tweeted about because the Hurricanes, one of the Hurricanes targets at cornerback decided to commit to Auburn, and I can't remember what you said or anything, but it was more so, were you defending Mike Rumpf?
I tweeted everybody come get your pitchforks for whenever another South Florida DB leaves Miami. Look, I mean, I'm not defending him. I think the track record kind of speaks for itself. When he was brought into Miami, it was the expectation that he would have an inside avenue to land a lot of the South Florida athletes because of his reputation within the South Florida high school community. Unfortunately, it just really hasn't lived up to that, quite frankly. Outside of that first 2018 class that I think, or 2017 class that featured Frierson and DJ Ivy and Al Blades, I think it was like that class. I can't remember if that was 18 or 17. Outside of that, yeah, he's really struggled. And I think what I will say is, in terms of development, I don't think he's as bad as people make him out to be, but just the track record is concerning, especially just because year after year we're continuously seeing guys within the area, Miami, just striking out on them. I think the task of him trying to land, you know, the Patrick Surtains and the Tyson Campbells of the world were a little difficult, but in theory that was Miami coming off of its best season. If I correct me if I'm wrong, that was coming off of the 2017 season. So yeah. I find it funny. I find the whole Canes Twitter mob, whenever they get mad at somebody, they seem to let it all out. But You know, you can also point to the win-loss record as why kids aren't choosing Miami.
Thank you. We're
going to be quite frank, I mean, it's just the reality. Auburn's a better program than Miami is right now. They have been for the past 3 years, outside of, you know, the outlier that was 2017. But with that, I don't think that that's enough of an excuse for a guy like Mike Rumpf, especially, you know, with how bountiful, you know, and how many athletes grow in South Florida in terms of the DBs and the safeties and receivers and in the Broward area, which is what he's responsible for. Miami just needs to recruit a lot better there. And, you know, I think to give Rumpf some credit, he's made up for it in with some signing day flips, you know, obviously Christian Williams. And then I think this past signing day, they flipped the DB, I think it's Dunn. Yeah, out of Atlanta. But it's still concerning to see that secondary room. It's granted, I think it's talented. It's not horrible by any means, but it's just not what a Miami defensive back room should look like.
Well, because, I mean, this has been a hot topic on this podcast ever since Jason Marshall announced his top three and Miami was not in it. I'm more of a – I know that he's had his troubles recruiting, but I just go back to his development of guys like Michael Jackson. You know, he was able to make Trajan Bandy into a solid cornerback. But right now, I mean, Jordan is he's not too confident in our cornerbacks this year, and I kind of don't blame him. What are you thinking? Are you nervous for our cornerbacks, or do you think Blades Jr. and Ivy and guys like Ta'Cory Couch can hold it down and we don't have to worry about that?
It's weird because I'm on the fence about it. I think the biggest indictment of the secondary thus far, specifically the corners, is just the inconsistency. That's the most frightening thing to me. And you know, you would assume with another year in the system and more playing time, guys would get better. It's funny to me because I think out of all the guys who have serious experience and playing time in that secondary room in the cornerbacks, I think the one I trust the most happens to be Al Blades. And I think that kind of says something considering that, you know, despite Al not being the best athlete at times, he's not the fastest. He is the most technically sound. He's the most physical, and he's the best tackler in that room thus far. You know, there's hope for guys like Christian Williams that, you know, he can come along and develop the way they want him to develop. I haven't given up hope on DJ Ivy. I still think, like you guys said, that there's times where he can flash his potential and be, you know, a starting cornerback. But the up and down play throughout all of last season from them was ultimately the biggest indictment of why on 4th and 17, we have a man streaking loose against University of North Carolina.
Tita.
In a blue game.
Bro, come on. You're really going to bring that up?
I mean, it's tough. It pissed me off just as much, man, but it's just the truth. You know, I mean, if let me ask you something. If you look in that cornerback room right now, can you point to a single corner and tell and say, I'm willing to match him up with any of the number ones across the conference?
Oh, hell no.
Nope.
No. Right. Right. And even last year, you might have been able to, like, maybe you might have been able to, like, say, like, hey, Trajan can put up a good fight with a lot of those corners. But yeah, even then, even Trajan had his ups and downs as well.
Against UNC, he got burned.
Right. Yeah. Right. So it's a room that there's a lot of room for improvement with that group. Ultimately, I do think that they can live up to the potential. And here's where I think people kind of have this misinterpretation of what a defensive back is responsible for. So it's not like Miami has had bad defensive lines. You know, for the past 3 years, we've had guys get drafted from our starting rotation on the defensive line. So it's not like we're not getting pressure. It's simply a matter of, can these guys stay on their receivers? Can they fill the right zones? Can they read receivers and where they're going in the QB's eyes? And so a lot is left to be desired with that cornerback room. And I think that if they can just be consistently average and be consistent, then we'll be in a decent place. I'll say that.
That sounds so depressing. Consistently average.
Well, right. But I mean, there's no one in that room right now. I mean, I like Takori Couch more than most. I think, you know, he's a guy that's going to flash. I want to see what Christian Williams looks like. I mean, I read an article recently that said that he looked like he was having a really good spring before everything got shut down. But once again, after that, like you're really kind of pulling straws there, and you can't really find too much in that cornerback room that you feel like this guy's a shutdown corner. This guy's a freak athlete. So.
Yeah. I mean, my issue is, like you said, you know, we have guys in there that we can hope for average production. I think we'll probably get that this year, but we've been on a downward trajectory with that cornerback room. I mean, Paul Williams had it loaded, with talent when Manny got here. You know, we're coming off of Artie Burns going first round. We had Sheldrick Redwine and Michael Jackson and, you know, all these guys that ended up being really, really good players. Malik Young, actually, he might have been recruited under Manny. But, you know, I just have a hard time justifying things for Rumpf when really the cupboard has gotten more bare every single year that Rumpf has been here. We've been downgrading in talent every season. And at what point is that going to lead to our defense no longer being elite? That's really what I'm worried about. Like you said, you know, we're missing on all these guys that we should be landing. We're not churning out draft picks at DB anymore. I mean, think about how good our secondary was in 2017 and even 2016. That was really the strength of our defense, and that was on a really, you know, much maligned Mark D'Onofrio defense is, you know, who assembled that kind of talent. Like, we should be doing better right now. We have an amazing defense, and we can't even stock the cupboard.
Right. Yeah, no, I agree entirely with what you're saying. It continues to show that, like, these big national misses are becoming larger and larger and more prominent of an issue, like you said, and the cupboard is getting bare. I mean, it you know, there's nobody outside of Frierson and Ivy in that room who is a South Florida. I mean, Takori was a guy that I'll give credit for. They stuck on him even after he committed to Michigan, and it ended up working out. But we have yet to see what he's really developed into. You know, he didn't really get too much playing time last season. I think Frierson is a guy that, you know, he's kind of caught in between a safety and a striker. And then, like, we know the story about DJ, like we said, but the Tyson Campbells, the Sertans, the Jobies, the obviously, like you guys said, in this class, Jason Marshall, Tarvaris Dawson, all these guys, these misses begin to stack up, and they become an issue when, you know, you're wondering why you're giving up an average of over 250 passing yards a game. And to your point, that 2018 pass defense was top five in the country. I think and that wasn't because the corners were amazing. It was because of the defense in general.
Yeah.
And now we have a more experienced Sam Howell coming into Hard Rock this year. And Jordan, I know you're not a Sam Howell guy, but that dude is a bowler.
I think he's good. I really do think he's good. I think he's maybe been a little overhyped this offseason, but I'm definitely scared of him throwing at our corners. I really am. You know, I think he's pretty comfortably at least the third best QB in the ACC this season. So, one more point I wanted to make, and this is, I mean, I want to double down a little bit on my criticism of Rumpf. I understand that our team hasn't been that good the last few years and that's going to work against us in recruiting, but he really has struggled more than our other position coaches. I mean, Banda just landed Devontae Williams. We just landed the best running back class. You know, our defensive line room is just absolutely loaded with talent. You know, we keep bringing in quality tight ends. Garen Justice is bringing in offensive linemen that are great. You know, so it's not like we're struggling everywhere. Granted, DB isn't the only position that we're struggling to recruit right now, but it's definitely probably one of the worst positions that we're recruiting. And so I don't want to give Rumpf a pass just because our team's been bad, because other guys are still pulling it off.
Well, to double, I'll even add to that. I would say, considering how good Miami's defense has been under Manny Diaz, outside of the defensive line, the rest of the just general depth, and you can make an argument at safety. Obviously, they landed Avante Williams on signing day and stole him from Florida, which is great. And I think Gervon and Bubba Bolden and Amari Carter are talented players, but there's also some other holes in this defense that I think don't get addressed. And to me, one of them was linebacker. And to be frank, we got lucky that Zach McLeod elected to take that red shirt.
Yeah.
Because if not, we wouldn't have a single linebacker that started more than one game last year.
Yeah.
Wayman Steed would be our starting linebacker.
Yeah, or Amari.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think I tweeted this today at Marsh, but I think Carter should be a linebacker.
Yes, thank you.
I think it makes total sense. He should be right next to whether it be McLeod or Sam Brooks or Avery Huff, which, I mean, I'm excited for Avery Huff because it seems very obvious that the talent was there. He just needed to figure things out and get his reps. But to me, everything that I understood after watching last season was that Amari Carter struggles the most in coverage, that he's much more of an in-the-box type of safety. And when, you know, if Manny Diaz ever wants to get this defense to the absolute peak level, you got to have a guy who can go sideline to sideline and thump. And look, I'm not saying, you know, Sam Brooks can't do that because we've only seen one game sample size from him. And it wasn't a bad game by all means, but you could tell that, you know, he was kind of lost at times, but I don't think McLeod is that guy at all. I think McLeod is a good middle linebacker who can kind of plug up the box and blitz the A and B gap. But Carter to me seems athletic enough to make those plays at the line of scrimmage while also roaming. I've seen some people throw out the idea of him being a striker, which I'm all for as well. I think that kind of suits his skill set as well. But Carter to me seems like a guy, when you look at him physically, he fits that linebacker mold.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, and I tweeted, we were talking today on Twitter. I'm like, when I was watching the 0-2 FSU Miami game yesterday, I saw Jonathan Vilma. They were talking about how he was undersized, but you know, he had that quickness that those old Miami defense liked, and I immediately thought of Amari Carter. And I mean, you bring up a great point. He's not a cover guy. I mean, I've seen him in practice, I've seen him in games. He's not a cover guy, but when you, especially when you blitz him and you put him up near the line of scrimmage, the dude is an athletic freak. I mean, he's built like the Terminator. So why are you like dropping him back into coverage when you can bring that, you know, up to those offensive linemen? And so I would love to see him go to a linebacker. I think he needs to bulk up a little bit, but no, I was glad that you brought that up.
Yeah, no, I love that idea. I think safety and defensive end are really the only positions on defense where we have a good accumulation of depth and talent. And so like let's start redistributing that talent elsewhere across the defense where we can. Because I'm with you 100%, Tito. I talk about it all the time. I am so scared about our linebacking depth.
It's a serious issue. Yeah.
I think people are banking on, and I mean, this isn't the most popular opinion. I think we're a little too confident in Zach McLeod. Even, I mean, people are kind of just calling him our rock, but you know, he was kind of the odd man out last year. I know he took his red shirt. You know, as a favor to Manny, and it was probably the best career decision, but like You know, he lost out on musical chairs. He was our third best linebacker last season. So there was a reason why he wasn't starting. So I think it's a little premature to feel super comfortable about him being a rock in the middle of the defense.
Yeah, I think I made this point with you guys last time, and it's a weird line of thinking to go by, which is I'm not expecting this linebacker group to be better. But what I will say is that if the prototypical linebacker that Manny wants, eventually the guys like Sam Brooks, Avery Huff, I even think a guy that I'm actually excited to see develop in this program is Tarek Austin Cave, him and potentially Corey Flagg. I know Corey Flagg is pretty athletic as well. If those guys develop into the way I think Manny and Blake Baker kind of envision them to, then I think they're going to fit schematically better of the responsibilities required in this defense. Because I keep referencing this because we're no longer just a regular 4-3. I think we're more 4-2-5 than anything now than anything else. So I keep trying to tell people that when you have that 4-2-5, those two guys in the middle have to be athletic freaks. And I think, you know, Tarek Austin Cave fits that. I think obviously Corey Flagg could potentially be that. Avery Huff is supposed to be. Hold on one second. My dog is freaking out right now.
You're all good.
All right, y'all can edit that out real quick if y'all can. But not to like to, just to summarize it, I guess I would say is McLeod, like you said, doesn't really fit. And you're right. He had his moments where he looks out of place. I think sometimes he takes bad angles. The hip rotation isn't exactly ideal in terms of covering receivers, but without question, he's immediately our best tackling linebacker. He's our most knowledgeable linebacker. I think he gets a bad rap for his athleticism. I think he's been an unfortunate victim to injuries at times, so I think that's maybe slowed down his mobility. But at the same time, if it's an option to have him or to not have him, you're obviously going to take him. And hopefully his experience can kind of brush off on a guy like a Sam Brooks and Avery Huff, Tarek Austin Cave. So I think you're right. I think ultimately, I mean, the depth is concerning because if one person goes down, then we're really looking at a thin linebacker group. God forbid two people go down. But if if Avery Huff and, you know, maybe we get a contribution from Tarek Austin Cave better than we thought we would get. I think we're in better shape, but it is a shaky group, no question about it.
Okay, well, let's talk about something happier and more positive. Today, I wrote an article on one of my favorite Hurricanes, Jacory Harris. And Tito, I saw you, and a lot of people were, you know, giving the article crap because I called Jacory Harris a Miami legend. And I want to thank you because you stood up for me and you were on the Jacory train. Have you always been a Jacory fan?
I have always kind of felt that in terms of looking back at Jacory's career, while we were in the moment, we didn't really appreciate it because, I mean, not all things considered, he was somewhat of a turnover machine. But I ultimately think he got a pretty raw deal at Miami for the reasons I laid out, one of them being that, you know, in his 4 years he had three offensive coordinators, the first one being the absolute worst offensive coordinator in the history of Miami. That was Patrick Nix. I guess Enos was also pretty god awful. I'll say this, I know it sounds like a very controversial point. I think Enos's offense isn't bad. It's his it's refusal to adapt and work with what he was given. I think it is an indictment, though, that he literally didn't land a quarterback job after leaving Miami. He became a running backs coach.
At Cincinnati.
So, I think Jacory, you know, for everything, for all the flack people like to give him, put up some really gaudy numbers while he was at Miami. You know, he was splitting reps with Robert Marv his freshman season. Awful decision made by Patrick Nix. Then in 2009, obviously, we have that explosive year where, you know, he was a Heisman candidate at one point, and go up to Tallahassee, the opening game of the season, and we pull off that incredible win where he looked like a superhero. And I mean, if I always say this, Jacory Harris was one of the most prolific quarterbacks in South Florida history. I know the defensive coordinator who told me that Jacory Harris was calling plays for Miami Northwestern because of how comfortable he was in that offense. I mean, he's running a spread option offense at the high school level, all based off memory. And if he had gotten the opportunity to run a true spread at Miami, you know, because he came to Miami and we kind of forced him to be that pro spread mix. And, you know, what would Jacory look like in an LSU offense where they're spreading the ball out with four or five wide receivers? What would Jacory Harris look like if he was at Oregon where he can, you know, have insane athletes around him where he can dump the ball off and make easy decisions? I think the pro offense really set him back. Ultimately, his propensity for turnovers was an issue as always. But I think to not consider him one of our, you could probably say top three QBs we've had in the last 15 years. I think that's insane.
Well, I mean, that's not saying much. I mean, you got Kaya and then who? Kirby Freeman?
Stephen Morris.
Stephen Morris. He was chill.
Yeah. Morris was another guy who got a raw deal, especially in 2013 when Golden made him play with the Achilles injury and stuff. So
yeah, I personally, you know, would take Morris over Harris. But I do think you're onto something with the offense thing. I just pulled up his numbers, and so under Jed Fish, who is arguably, well, I would pretty comfortably say he's the best offensive coordinator we've had recently. So his senior year, he was definitely much more efficient as a passer. I mean, it was his highest QB rating. It was his best touchdown to interception ratio. And we did air things out a little more and, you know, had more of a spread look than your traditional Canes archaic pro style offense. So I think you're onto something there with that. But I don't know. My take is very emotional when it comes to Harris, because he just ripped my heart out so many times throwing 48 picks in his career.
That so. North Carolina game, dude, in 2009.
Yeah, that was a bad one. That was a bad one.
But here's the question, and I want to ask you, because of those 2 to 3 games, the FSU, Georgia Tech, and Oklahoma game, would you classify him as a Miami legend? Jacory Harris.
I think he's without question one of the more notable players in the last couple of years we've had. I think to coin him as a legend is a stretch, and maybe that's just because of the weight that term carries. Because when I think of a legend, I think of somebody that is associated with the logo of the university. And I don't think Jacory is one of the first 40 names, maybe even 50 names that you say when you think of the University of Miami. Now, if you're asking me about, you know, who have been some of the best QBs we've had in this decade or the last 15 years, I think Jacory is top three. Like I said, top two. I think he provided us with moments that, you know, that win over FSU is, like I said, it's the last biggest, it's our biggest upset road victory we've had in the last 15 years, outside of Miami going to Virginia Tech in 2005 and shutting down Marcus Vick. But that wasn't even a great QB performance. That was our defense just absolutely wiping the floor with Vick. So
that 2009 FSU game, like, I talk about that game maybe more than any other Hurricanes game in my lifetime. That game was nuts. That pass he threw to Travis Benjamin on that last drive at the corner, that's one of the greatest passes you will ever see.
It was, and people don't remember, that was a broken play. I think that play was like supposed to be like a fullback screen to Tarvaris Johnson or something. And Ja'Cory saw that it was busted and just threw a dime to Travis Benjamin. And look, like Jordan was saying, I think if you got a chance to run it back again with Ja'Cory, and maybe you know, who knows, maybe you put him in the Rhett Lashley offense, I would not be the least bit surprised if he put up even bigger and better numbers than he was when he was forced to work with a Patrick Nix, when he was forced to work with a Mark Whipple, and those coaches just didn't really take into account what are Ja'Cory's strengths. He had a strong arm, had a fantastic deep ball. You know, he wasn't the strongest arm in terms of velocity, but he was a guy that when you spread things out for him and you give him multiple options, I felt like he had the idea to make the right throws. But to his credit, I mean, to his detriment, you know, he did throw a lot of interceptions. I remember, you know, the USF game in 2011, he checked in for Stephen Morris. And I think all he needed to do was just drive it down the field and set up for a field goal in the fourth quarter, and he threw an interception.
Yeah.
So that could have potentially won us the game, but I like you said, I don't know if he's a legend, but I definitely think in the last 20 years, he's without question one of the more notable faces of Miami.
Yeah, just my take on that, for what it's worth. I mean, I'm not a Miami native, and my perception of the idea of Harris being a Miami legend, I've always assumed, and what you were talking about earlier, Tito, kind of backs that up. I've always assumed that he, you know, he was more notable in high school than college.
Yeah, 100%.
At least at the time, I'm, you know, Twitter's helped me be a lot more plugged into South Florida high school football now. But back then, I didn't know anything about him until his senior year of high school. And there's never really been anything special about him. I was as hyped as anyone for his sophomore campaign when we, you know, and then going into his junior campaign when we were ranked like eighth in the country preseason, you know, we thought that he was going to be a Heisman finalist. You know, I was all about that. But right as his career was wrapping up, I was really just excited to move on from him.
Without question. Yeah.
I personally think that it would be a huge reach to call him a Miami legend for what he did with the Hurricanes. If we're talking about, you know, what he did at Northwestern, then, you know, I won't speak on that because I never watched him play high school ball. But, you know,
I got much backlash when I posted that article today. People thought I was out of my mind.
Well, he's legendary in the fact that, you know, the people love him for whatever reason. So
just because of just those two games, man, Ja'Cory Heisman hype was real.
Yeah, but
correct me if I'm wrong, he said he was going to show up to the Heisman Memorial Service with a pimp cup and pink suit. God. Isn't that what he said? Yeah, that was great.
Dude, I was drinking that Kool-Aid so hard. I was in like middle school back then, and I was telling my friends like, "Hey, watch out this year. You know, my guy's going to show up with a pimp cup," and then they're like, "Yeah, that didn't go very well for you, bro."
Good deal. Okay, well, Tito, we always love having you on, brother. We need to get you on some more, and hope you're doing well and during this Rona season. And whenever you want to come back on and talk some Canes, maybe talk some Heat, you're welcome, brother.
Appreciate it, guys, as always, man. Thank you for having me. Hope everybody's staying safe, as always, and hopefully we can get to watch some Hurricanes this season, man.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Hey, thanks, Tito.
No, I appreciate it, guys. Thank you, guys, man. Appreciate you guys having me on. Y'all have a good one, all right?
All right, brother. Talk to you later.
Later.
So, breaking news.
Okay.
Taulia Tagovailoa commits to Maryland.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Yeah.
I mean, I'm not pissed. Like, I'm not mad. And no. Also, apparently, we are about to lose Thad Franklin.
Oh, to where?
He's just decommitting.
Okay. Again.
Yeah. Yeah. Remember we recorded an episode. I mean, this podcast isn't that long or that old, but yeah. We recorded an episode when he recommitted.
Yeah.
Okay, let's not get mad. We have a second guest coming on, and his name is John effing Michaels.
Yeah, he's not quite ready for us yet, so let's we can actually dig into this Thad Franklin thing for a sec. But yeah, dude, I think I'm done with him. Like, even if he flip-flops again, like, screw that. You know what I mean? You can only decommit from the Canes twice before I'm completely done with you.
Yeah, well, what's the kid that went to Nebraska? He decommitted from us like 17 times this past year.
I don't know. Screw that kid, dude. I mean, I know he's like 17 or whatever, but that's just like, you're at that point, you're either just like a douche or you weren't raised very well.
Yeah, it's just not respectful.
No.
Like, come on.
Yeah, I mean, it's whatever. But yeah, I'm not surprised about Lee at all.
I was kind of buying into the idea of little Tua coming here.
Yeah, I was comfortable with it. Like I said on here that, you know, like I have 100% trust in Lashley. If Lashley wants him, then I'm hyped. You know, like I believe in Rhett Lashley. But I've also been saying on Twitter that, like, I didn't view him as a can't-miss prospect. I was very intrigued by his pedigree and, you know, just being Tua's brother and, you know, being a highly sought-after recruit. So I was always open to it. I was willing to give him the scholarship, even if it counted against next year. I was all aboard if that was Lashley's decision. But, you know, I'm fine with him not committing here. It doesn't bug me.
I mean, I literally spent like 3 hours today, like, researching him and like writing up about him because I did my Marsh's mailbag for State of the U. Uh-huh. Like I swear I had like 17 questions. Yeah. Like, I'll tell you, I don't know what the hell his name is, but so I literally just wasted 3 hours of my day. So that's dope.
Yeah. Hey, would you mind shooting John a text message? He's not responding to me on here. Or a DM or something. But, yeah, dude, it's, I don't know, I'm fine with that. And then Aaron McLaughlin committed to NC State. So, who knows? I guess, what's the kid's name? Demetrius Davis or something?
He's committing somewhere else tomorrow.
Oh, it's not to Miami. It's to Auburn, probably.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think our only hope is whatever the Longhorns kid's name is, Jalen Milroe or whatever.
Yeah. And then we just offered that kid out of Georgia, but he has a Clemson offer.
Isn't he a 2022 kid?
I thought he was 2021.
I mean, we are just like – we've lost like 9 quarterback prospects within the last 2 weeks. Like, I thought this was the Lashley era.
Yeah, you know, that's – that's kind of something interesting to get into is obviously these high school kids aren't buying into the Lashley era like we are. And who knows? Who knows what that means? Hopefully nothing.
I mean, it just sounds like, I mean, we just have more Kane in them, you know? We're just more dedicated. They don't know. They don't know that it's about you.
Yeah. And, you know, it doesn't really seem like we're on top of Miller Moss anymore. I don't know if Rhett has contacted Jake Garcia at all. I know that was kind of Dan Enos's thing. But really, I mean, if we can't take a QB this cycle, there's always the transfer portal, but I mean, we have Cozy and Tate. We have Tyler Van Dyke.
And Tate's winning the Heisman next year.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
No matter what position he plays. Starting running back, wide receiver, tight end, quarterback.
Damn it, dude. Like, that was kind of – and especially, like, the Thad Franklin news. If he – because apparently he just deleted all of his Miami stuff on social media.
Yeah.
Like, really, like, how do you decommit from a school, like, more than once? Like, don't you, like – if you're not sold on it, don't commit.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to call John right now.
Let's do it.
Cool. John, what is up, dude?
What's up, man? How you guys doing?
Yeah, we are welcomed by our boy, John Michaels. What's going on, brother?
Oh, man, just enjoying the dream. Just getting back from a little mini vacation down to New Orleans and over to Savannah. Spent some days on the beach, so kind of refreshed and ready to go.
Yeah, dude, that's what's up.
Good deal, man. I mean, I wish I was in. We were in a little bit better mood. Tua's little brother just announced he was going to Maryland.
Okay. I'm not, you know, I'll be honest, I'm not mad about that. You know, he had the relationship with Mike Locksley. That was who was part of his recruiting team at Alabama. He's going to get a chance to walk in there and, you know, assuming that he gets a waiver, he could be the day one starter there. If he doesn't get a waiver, he'll sit a year and he'll be a starter there. I think he probably looked at the depth chart at Miami and the recruiting that's going on at Miami and said, you know, maybe I don't want to sit a year and then try to fight with the kid Tyler Van Dyke and see if I can win the job. And then, you know, obviously Manny Diaz is out scouring, trying to find us some new quarterback recruits as we speak. If we land one in 2021, great. If we don't, you know, we do have a couple of kids there in Van Dyke and Peyton Matosha, who along with Nikosi Perry and Tate Martell, that are going to be fighting for the job anyway. So I'm not hurt too bad by it. I am a little surprised he didn't at least take a visit to Miami and check it out. But, you know, so to speak, we're okay right now at quarterback.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. So there's two topics that I want to get into you with. The first, okay. So ESPN yesterday, they were reshowing all of these old Miami FSU games. Obviously the one that everyone was watching was the 2002. That was my first Canes game ever. I know you said that you were there. Where does the Miami FSU rivalry rank for you in college football?
It's right up there with Michigan, Ohio State, and Alabama, Auburn, and Army, Navy. And, you know, nationally, I know people say, well, the game hasn't mattered in 20 years, which, you know, quite frankly, the last game that really had national relevance was probably 2005 at the beginning of the year when they were both highly ranked. I'm actually writing an article. So here's a little sneak preview for something that'll be out this weekend on State of the U. I'm writing an article why Miami needs Florida State and Florida State needs Miami. Both of them, you know, the old saying goes, iron sharpens iron. And when your in-state rival is great and you're aspiring to be great, I think it pushed both those programs to heights that they may not have also gotten to without the other one being really good for a 20-year stretch. But anybody nationally that tries to argue that that rivalry isn't every bit as intense and every bit as important as Alabama, Auburn, Michigan, Ohio State, Army, Navy really hasn't been watching college football. Because let's be real. Army, Navy, I know it's for a different reason. Nationally, that game hasn't mattered since our grandparents were serving in the military. I mean, the 40s was the last time that those games as football actually really mattered. There were stretches for Auburn, Alabama that you don't have to go back very far where either Auburn sucked or Alabama sucked. Yet, if you've ever been in that state, and I'm just one state over, hell, Paul Feinbaum makes $5 million a year getting those yahoos to talk about Auburn and Alabama day in and day out. And Michigan, Ohio State's been a very lopsided rivalry, very streaky. Right now, Ohio State flat out owns old khaki pants in Jim Harbaugh. But there were times where Michigan dominated Ohio State for many years. John Cooper and Earl Bruce, who would win 9-10 games every single year, couldn't beat Michigan, and they kept getting fired for it. And it really took until they got Jim Tressel and obviously Urban Meyer for that rivalry to turn around in the favor of Ohio State. But Miami, Florida State's right there. I mean, you think about from 1983 really to 2002. So that's basically a 20-year stretch. You had what, 7 national championships won by the schools. Miami lost another 3 or 4. Florida State lost another couple. And how many times did Florida State not win a national championship because they lost to Miami by a missed field goal? So you start thinking over a 20-year stretch, there was not a more important rivalry in college football. And I beg anybody that says, hey, this rivalry doesn't matter, show up at Hard Rock Stadium this year if we're allowed to be there. And tell the 65,000, 70,000 crazed fans there how much that rivalry matters one way or another. It's one of the best. It's put more NFL players in the league just about than anybody. There's been Hall of Famers littered all over it. And again, tell me the next time ESPN throws up USC Notre Dame or one of the Texas Oklahoma on a day right now like they did Miami Florida State yesterday.
So I got two things to say. First of all, I'm kind of pissed because I was literally going to write an article for the State of the U literally just like that, because I was thinking the exact same thing, because I tweeted out something last night how both Miami and FSU need to get their shit together. College football is so much better when the Canes and the Noles are great. I mean, this is a classic rivalry. Yeah, it hasn't been. I mean, I think the last relevant game was 13 when I think we were both in the top 10. But yeah, 05 was like the real like last meaningful game, and it's definitely fallen off. And you got to be a lifelong Canes fan to understand what this rivalry means. And I also lived in Tallahassee, a block away from that stadium, so I saw both sides of it. And also, I lived in Alabama for a year of my life, and so that rivalry is different than Miami FSU. It's more intense, I'd say. Miami Florida State has had greater players and better moments. Those people in Alabama, they're just sick.
I think part of that, the state of Alabama does not have – it doesn't have a Major League Baseball team. It doesn't have an NBA team. There's no hockey. There's nothing. And they don't have an NFL team. The only thing they have to do there is Alabama and Auburn. I like to say that it's incestual. I know that sounds horrible, but to be honest with you, cousins hate each other on the day that Alabama and Auburn play. There are husbands and wives who won't speak to each other when Alabama and Auburn play. So it's a different type of hate than Miami, Florida State. Miami, Florida State is literally, I'll punch you in the face because you were that god-awful puke Garnet and Gold. And I said last night, I looked on like Romberg's page and DJ Williams page and the ESPN college football page and the Canes football page and all these other ones. And you always have that FSU dork. It's always one. It may not be the same guy every time, but there's always that FSU dork that wants to go on there. You haven't won an ACC title. I don't give a rat's ass about a fucking ACC title. Get your sorry asses the 5 national championships or shut the fuck up. Win a baseball national championship and stop choking on Mike Martin's Johnson all the time or shut the fuck up. You hired our basketball coach and you're actually really good. I give Florida State credit. They're really good at basketball. Still haven't won a national title. Miami never gave a shit about winning a conference title. I couldn't tell you how many Big East titles we won because I didn't care. The Big East title was just a roadblock or a speed bump on the way to winning a national title. So if you're that Florida State dork that wants to get on our page, there's a reason we hate you. You've always wanted to be us. You never could be us. Look at the history. 14 times I think Miami and Florida State have met when both were in the top 10. Miami's won 10 of the 14. You are always our bitches. You'll always be our bitches. And I want you to be good just so we can smack your sorry asses back to reality where you are. You're the redneck school in Tallahassee that people go to because it's cheap. And that's the only reason people go up there.
I think we can end the episode right there.
I mean, honestly, I run into, and don't get me wrong, I have a lot of friends who are Florida State alum. Forrest Conley's a good friend of mine, lives 10 minutes from here. He played with Charlie Ward. You know, one of my best friends, Raja Green, and his wife, they literally are both Florida State alum, although Raja's still a Miami fan, even though he graduated from Florida State. I have Florida State fans that are friends of mine. It's just the dorks. And you know they have them. They're the ones that, you know, I don't follow whatever the Tomahawk Chop or the Seminole Pea or whatever the hell it is that they write on. Yet they're always on our page. We write an article for State of the U. There'll be 10 comments that are Florida State people. It's like, do you guys think about us that much that you always want to comment? I may put a funny comment to Derek Brooks only because I've met him before, or I'll put a funny comment to Forrest because he's my guy. The rest of those people, man, screw them. Stay in Tallahassee, wear those stupid Seminole feathers, do that idiotic chop, and go back to your trailer parks a couple of days from now.
Well,
love it.
Well, next week on the John Michaels podcast.
Yeah, but let's be honest. That's the hatred we have for – and don't get me wrong, there's Florida State people. Like I said, Forrest is my guy. Forrest, and I think they were talking about this last night before the 2002 game. I think Vilma may have said it. The second they end the week before, like that game ends the Saturday before Florida State, they all look at each other and go, it's FSU week. Mm-hmm. And I feel that way as a fan. When we win, like I forgot who we beat the week before Florida State this year. As soon as that game ends, yeah, we beat Pitt. It's Florida State week. Yep. Nothing else matters, but fuck them. And that's how I feel. My friends and I don't talk to each other. Like, don't say anything to me this week. We're going to kick your ass, and next Sunday I'm going to talk shit to you like I do 365 days a year.
Bro, I'm ready to kick off, man. Let's freaking go. I know. I will say, like, so, yeah, I mean, I grew up with that rivalry. I grew up going to those games in the Orange Bowl. I heard that dumbass chop over and over and over. I didn't realize how much they actually played and how frequently they played until I was rewatching that game. Good God. It's the most disgusting, most vile sound in the world. Like, I share your – you're like me, like, 10 years older or 15 years older, John. Like, you sound exactly like me because I hate them. And exactly, like, the week before FSU, when that game is over, that night, it's FSU week. Like, I'm ready to go, and damn.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I'll be honest, it makes me, and yeah, I'm 45. My days of playing contact football are long since past. I'll play some flag football, and that's about it. But, you know, when that week hits, it's like, man, I want to put on some pads, tape up the Achilles as high as I can, and go get it. I'll give you a story. You know, this year I was able to take my entire family down because Florida State was bad. We weren't as good as we should have been. Tickets were relatively cheap as opposed to what I paid in the past to go to Tallahassee. And it's only about a 3.5-hour drive from Atlanta. So I hop in the car, and I brought all three of my kids and my wife. And my wife's been to Miami FSU with me one other time. Her first game was 2017, and she got to see, like I said, she got to see me cry. I mean, I had tears of joy streaming down my face. She was like, I can't believe me and my best friend Carnell are literally in tears at the end of the game because we won. And she goes, I can't believe football means that much. And I said, hush, just understand that this isn't football. This is hatred. Well, my kids, they've seen me in the basement going crazy during Miami games, and they've seen me yelling on social media. They got to see when we got to Tallahassee where I flip a switch. And we had some, you know, some idiot lady next to me. Every time Florida State, she was doing the chop in front of my face. I said, chop in front of my face one more motherfucking time, and you're going to see Miami. And my kids look, and I said, you know what? You guys are older. They're almost teenagers. I said, every time they do that chop, we're going to do the fuck you Seminoles. And I started doing it as loud. And it's horrible parenting. But they were like, they looked at me and they go, Dad, you really don't like them. Why? I said, because they're wearing those fucking colors. That's why I don't like them. So my kids got to laugh. And that's where I'll tell anybody around the country, you know, there are rivalries. And I've been lucky enough. I've been to Seattle to go to a game in Washington and see the intensity of the Huskies. You know, Marsh, I know you're in Utah. I know Utah and BYU, like, they would murder each other. That's how much they can't stand each other. Miami, Florida State is right there.
Dude, I that 2017 game, I will never, ever forget. I was at Capone's Flicker Light on Hollywood Beach in Florida, and I shed tears because that was truly, like, that meant so much to me and meant so much to Miami fans. That was 7 years of straight hell. Because most of those losses, I mean, some were blowouts, but a lot of them were blocked PAT, or like we lose by 3 at home, or we lose by 5 in Tallahassee. Like, we were right on the cusp. And then to do it in Tallahassee the way we were able to do it with Darrell Langham, I stood there at the bar and I was speechless. I was literally speechless. I mean, you're making me realize, like, how much, like, this rivalry, like, God damn it, both teams need to be good again.
Yeah, they do. And, you know, I was lucky enough growing up in the 80s and 90s where we knew I circled week 6 on the calendar, whatever week it was. And I didn't give a damn if I failed a class. I didn't give a damn if I had a job that I was going to quit. It didn't matter. When Miami and Florida State played, we made something out of it. And thinking back to those games, and I know they've shown over the last couple of days, the 92 game, the intensity of that. My 16th birthday was 3 days before the wide right one game. So number one versus number two. And, you know, and this is something that I always remember. My birthday was like on a Wednesday. I think they played them November 16th minus the 13th. Well, unbeknownst to me, my mother decides to throw a surprise birthday party for me that Saturday. My, you know, it's my 16th birthday. Every person, again, to tell you how old I was, every person that called our house, my mom would tell them, hey, John's having a birthday on Saturday. You know, come on over to the house. Don't tell him, but tell all of his friends. Well, Miami and Florida State kicks at noon. And by like 3 o'clock, we're in the battle. Like if we win, we're going to win a national championship. And all of a sudden people start ringing my doorbell. And I'm like, why the fuck are people showing up to my house at 3 o'clock and Miami and Florida State are playing? And by the end of the game, there were probably 20 people there. By the end of the night, there were hundreds of people at my house. But there's literally 20 people, and I won't talk to any of them. My mom's like, it's your birthday. It's Miami, Florida State, and we're playing, and Gino Toretta and Larry Jones and Stephen Maguire, we're trying to win a national title. And when Jerry Thomas misses a field goal, I jump, I punch my ceiling, and I just run out of my house. I jump in my car, and I left. I came back like an hour later because I was so excited that Miami won. I literally couldn't be around people. And I came back and my mom goes, where the hell did you go? I said, I had to celebrate that Miami won and we're going to win another national title. And that's where that rivalry needs to get back to. That's where I want Florida State to be 7-0 when we play them. I want us to be 7-0 when we play them and the entire nation to see again that, hey, this isn't a 20-year rivalry. This isn't something that's going away. This is something that means more than anybody else in the country.
I mean, that's perfectly – sorry, Jordan, you go
ahead. Well, I'm just saying, John, you're killing it, man. Like, I wish I could articulate the rivalry as well as you just did. I mean, I'm sure, you know, most of our listeners, if not all of them, can relate to what you're saying. I know I certainly can. You know, it's just different. You know, it's the biggest rivalry game. I can't stand when people say that we have other teams that are bigger rivals to us than Florida State, because it's intense, man.
It is. And here's the thing for me where it differentiates from others. Florida chicken shit their way out of the rivalry in 1987. They can say whatever they want. Their school president wanted no parts of playing Miami every year. They also partially blocked us from going to the SEC in the early 90s. Miami was going to go into the SEC, and Florida goes, no, we don't want the Canes here. I think they blocked Florida State from going there as well, which is how the Noles ended up in the ACC. Notre Dame, I hated them as a kid just as much as Florida State, because they robbed us of a championship in 1988. And I always felt they were, and this is going to sound horrible to say, and this is not a racial thing, but they were the stuffy white kids. And I didn't grow up with stuffy white kids in South Florida. Palm Beach Lakes High School was anything but stuffy white kids. I mean, we were all kids. The white kids at our school were kids that grew up rough and didn't have a lot of money. And our football team was all mixed up, you know, different races of everybody. And I looked at Notre Dame as the stuffy white kids that nobody wanted to be around. They were the Wellington of college football. So I hated them. But then they backed out of playing us every year. Florida State's never backed out of playing us, no matter where we were, how good we were, how bad we were. I respect them for that. But that's also why, you know, yeah, Ohio State beat us in a game. Notre Dame's beat us. We play them once every 4 or 5 years. It's hard to hate somebody the same when you don't see them every day. Virginia Tech, they beat us when we sucked. Like, them beating us is only when Miami's been bad.
Absolutely, man. You make me ready for November 7th at Hard Rock Stadium. If there's fans at the stadium, you bet your ass I will be there. Okay. I want to ask you one more question. We've been talking a lot about Mike Rumpf on this podcast, mm-hmm. especially, you know, over the past few weeks, because, you know, certain cornerbacks have left Miami out of their recruiting process. I want to hear your thoughts on Mike Rumpf. Do you think he's on the hot seat? Do you think there needs to be a change at the coaching position? Or what are you thinking about Mike Rumpf?
Is he a great recruiter? Probably not. I mean, is he a good recruiter? Yes, he has us in the mix for everybody. Unfortunately for me, South Florida kids are just different. It's not where it was in 2000. Hell, it's not where it was in 2010. Kids, they take an honest look at Miami and they go, what the hell have they won? Why am I going to go there? And if you're Pat Surtain Jr., yeah, you leave. If you're Tyson Campbell, you go to Georgia. Are there bags being thrown around? You damn right they are. There are bags being thrown around everywhere in college football. Anybody that thinks your school isn't paying for kids, you're just naive. Miami pays for kids. Alabama pays for kids. Georgia pays for kids. Florida pays for kids. You name it, they're paying kids. What I like about Rump, and this will probably be one that people don't agree with my take, I like that he develops kids. Michael Jackson was a sort of unknown three-star kid that develops into a draftable player who was a damn good lockdown corner. You know, he's developed other kids in the secondary who have become really good defensive backs at the college level. Would I like him to pick it up recruiting-wise? You're damn right I would. But I'd like the entire team to pick it up recruiting-wise. I think Rump gets singled out because he lost the American Heritage kids, which really hurt because he had a relationship with those kids. The rest of these kids, they're fickle. They want to win championships. They want to go to places where they're going to win 10, 11 games and play in a major bowl game. Right now, Miami's fighting against that. What Manny's done recruiting and in the portal is nothing short of amazing. But I can't single out Mike Rumpf just and look at him and go, well, we got to get rid of him because of his lack of recruiting. Our offensive line up until now with Garen Justice has been dreadful recruiting. Linebackers, if we don't fall into three really good linebackers in McLeod, Shaq Quarterman, and Michael Pinckney, when's the last good linebacker we signed outside? You know, I know those kids were there for 4 years, but this year it's going to be, all right, thankfully McLeod stayed. You know, I hope Sam Brooks can live up to some of the hype, but we haven't really loaded up there. When's the last time we loaded up at defensive tackle? I know Nesta was a high-ranked recruit. The rest of these kids are, you know, 3/4-star guys. We haven't really knocked it out of the park anywhere recruiting. And I think Mike Rumpf, because he lost his own high school kids, he's a guy that gets a bad rap.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. I do think you can kind of separate our position coaches into like two factions, the good recruiters and the bad recruiters. You know, I would have like Pat Key, probably Baker in there, and then Rumpf in our not so great recruiters. I do think Rumpf gets unfairly singled out in that group. However, I do think he's fairly solidified in the group of being a bad recruiter among our coaches. I don't, you know, looking at the type of guys that Stephen Field brings in and Eric Hicks in, and, you know, Justice has been, geez, he's just been pulling gem after gem out of his hat. And, you know, Manny, when he's hit the trail, has had some success too. I don't think it's fair to just say that Rumpf gets a pass because of a record when, like, Hickson is doing work, man. Like, Eric Hickson is pulling some really, really, really great players out of high school. And, you know, I just think it does the job he's doing a disservice to let Rumpf get a pass for our record.
No, I agree. And I don't give him a pass. I do think he's a mediocre to average recruiter at best. I mean, let's be honest. Al Blades is a kid who could have gone anywhere, and he got him. Gilbert Frierson could have gone anywhere. DJ Ivy could have gone anywhere. So he's gotten kids to stay home. He just hadn't gotten enough. Trajan Bandy could have gone anywhere. He just hasn't gotten enough, and that's the issue. When you're looking in your own backyard and you see five-star, 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 and they end up at Alabama, Clemson, and Florida, you know, you go, how the hell did C.J. Henderson leave here? You know, how did Josh Jobe leave here? Although I haven't heard much of Josh Jobe since he's gotten to Alabama. How did Pat Surtain leave here and you coached him? How did Tyson Campbell leave here and you coached him? He doesn't get a pass for that. But the guys that he gets on campus, he's developed them to be pretty good players. And I think we get lost a little bit in just recruiting. Player development has to be good as well. And when you have good player development, you know, sometimes that to me will overshadow the misses on the recruiting trail. But Rumpf has to pick it up. I give him the. Do I think he's on the hot seat? No. If Manny had a year that he was going to fire him, it should have been this year.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you want to go that, who the hell are we pulling at wide receiver? Because we should be much more loaded than we are at wide receiver right now.
We have, I'll be honest, wide receivers committed right now. Zero. Yeah.
And we don't have a difference maker at wide receiver right now. Yeah. There's never a time, and I like KJ Osborne came in and was a star last year. There shouldn't be a time that a kid that transfers from the University of Buffalo becomes the number one at the University of Miami. Oh, part of that Yeah, and part of that, Dan Enos' offense sucked ass. I mean, it was horrible. But yeah, you have to find playmakers, and we're not finding them as of right now.
And to go along with what you're saying, because I completely agree, and this speaks towards the type of kid that KJ is, but also it's unacceptable that a kid from the University of Buffalo transfers in and is not only our most skilled, hardest working player that's immediately the leader in the locker room, but he is the most, I mean, air quote, Miami player in that whole room. And
you know what it is? He doesn't believe in the hype. He doesn't buy into the hype of wearing the U. He went in and I'm not at practice, but everybody said he worked his ass off from the day he got on campus. He was tougher in the weight room. He worked harder after practice. We need more kids like that. I'm hoping that now with Rhett Lashley's offense and these receivers knowing, oh shit, I might catch 75, 80 balls like Prochet did a year ago at SMU. I better get my ass in and start working. Mark Pope should be a star, but Mark Pope is no better today than he was the day that he set foot on campus almost 3 years ago. And that has to change. And that's, again, going back to the Mike Rump thing, his kids, you see progression.
Yeah.
When's the last receiver that we've seen progression out of?
That's a very good point. And you know, I agree with you about Rump. I think that's what's keeping him here. I'm definitely more in the camp of, you know, I think I'm ready to move on from him. But I think as long as he keeps developing guys, I mean, if Blades has a really fantastic year, or Ivy or Couch, or, you know, Christian Williams was even getting some hype from the 4 days of spring ball. You know, if one of those guys breaks out, then Rump might buy himself some more time. But I'm just very concerned at the trajectory of our cornerbacks room in terms of how much talent and even how many guys we have in there. We don't even have a lot of bodies in that room right now. So
yeah, and that part sucks. And you're spot on with that. I mean, God forbid if Al Blades goes down, I don't know. You know, Tecori Couch may be really good. Christian Williams may be really good. Who was a kid we brought in late this year that was a 4-star? Yeah, he may end up being very good, but you're talking about three kids in those three that haven't played any meaningful football. So we really need Blades. We really need Ivy. You know, those guys got to stay healthy. We would have loved to have Trajan Bandy come back another year. That didn't happen. You know, and something else I'm going to put together. I've got two different things to put together. One of them, I'm not going to lie, Manny Navarro actually wrote an article that I kind of had spot on where it equated the draft and Miami being good. But another one, and I want to ask you guys this, because I literally just went to New Orleans, one of the hot spots, quote unquote, for the coronavirus. I just was in Savannah and Hilton Head where the beaches are open. I spent 2 days laying on the beach with my kids around thousands of other people. If football opens up, and this is something I'm going to ask on State of the U and get some opinion from a lot of different people. If football opens up, just say September 5th, we open against Temple and the stadium's open, will you be there as we stand currently?
Hell yeah.
So my mom is high risk. I don't know if I'd go to the opener, but if there was no problems, then I'd definitely go to a game in late October, early November.
Yeah. And I'm definitely I've already made plans. I'll be honest. You know, we play here in Atlanta. Against Georgia Tech, that's a no doubter for me. I'll go down for the Florida State game, depending on what I'm doing work wise at that time. I may go down and, you know, go to another game or two, probably try to go to the North Carolina game as well. But, you know, I've gotten in a lot of arguments with people on social media about, you know, the coronavirus and what we should be doing. The state I live in right now has been open for 3 weeks. I've been at the gym every single day. I've used this time to try to, you know, better myself more than anything, but I'm always trying to get the pulse of people, what they're going to do. I have friends that work in the industry with me that say we shouldn't do anything until there's a vaccine. And then I have other people like me, Barrett Salee, who writes for CBS Sports, a really good friend of mine. Barrett's like, dude, we cannot stay cooped up in our house for another year and a half. We just can't. Yeah. And, you know, if they had playoffs tomorrow, I'd be at the playoffs tomorrow watching some NBA.
Yeah. Yeah, I gotta get out of this damn house. I have to.
That's why I'm lucky. I'll say that's where I'm lucky living in Georgia. Things are open. I mean, it's almost back to normal. You still can't really go sit in a restaurant crowded full of people. Bars and nightclubs aren't open, but I'll be honest, I'm 45. My days of bars and nightclubs are very limited at this point. But
here in sorry, go ahead, brother.
No, I'm saying, but you know, the gym's open and there's 200 people in the gym every day. I don't give a damn. I'm in there lifting weights, running on the treadmill. My boxing gym opens tomorrow so I can go start punching things. So I'm good.
Love it.
Yeah, I mean, they're pretty – I mean, Jordan, wouldn't you say they're like things are getting kind of back to normal here in Utah at least.
Yeah, I actually – I ate inside of a restaurant last night. I got some Vietnamese food and sat down with the girlfriend. So that was fun.
There you go.
You know, it was the first time in a few months. So I think it's kind of getting back to normal here. I'm kind of with you though, John. Like I think this thing was kind of overblown. I mean, I'm no expert. I'd be kind of surprised if it gets really bad again and we have to go through all this, but you know, I do think I'm personally going to be a little more cautious, but I'm all for, governments, you know, making the steps to reopen everything.
Yeah, I'm there. And, you know, seeing all the stuff that's come out in the last 3 to 4 days about college football, I know the Pac-12 with California and Oregon, you know, maybe the Pac-12 doesn't open in September. Yeah. That's a them problem. I think the rest of the country is going to do whatever they can. I think the Pac-12 is going to do whatever they can to play football. There's too many billions of dollars at stake for us not to have college football.
Especially in the South, man.
If all we miss out on is the Pac-12, I'm not feeling too bad. It's a very mediocre football out here.
Wait, so John, if you had to guess, do you think that Hard Rock Stadium is open to the public on September 5th?
No, I don't think so. I think there's going to be, if it is open, it's going to be on a limited basis. Everybody I've talked to has said, look, the NBA and baseball are probably going to do at least a month or more without fans. I just find it hard to believe that we're going to be 65,000 strong week one. I think by the time the season's over, we'll be back to having full fans in the stands. I think they'll do something on a limited basis, you know, and I hate to take shots at our fan base. It won't kill us if they do, you know, 30 or 40% for some of the grab-ass games that we play early on in the year. And by the time we get to conference play, I think they'll open it up, which should help Miami, because I think so many people are going to go, wait, I haven't had a chance to go see them play Temple or Wagner or one of these other grab-ass schools. And I think that can help us when we play the North Carolinas and the Florida States of the world. I think people are going to come out and be ready to cheer on the thing that they love the most, and that's the University of Miami.
I might be going down to cover those first three games for State of the U. I might be all by myself.
You might be. It'll be you, and it'll be Cam, and you know, maybe a couple of people from 560, whatever the hell they're called now, the Joe, I guess. No longer, it's still QAM to me, but that's a whole different story. But yeah, the only reason I didn't take some of the credentials, and I'll be honest, I can't sit in the press box. I can't sit there and not cheer. The last time I was in the press box for a Miami game, we played Georgia Tech, must have been 2008, because Robert Marv was the quarterback. If we won, we would have gone to the ACC championship game. And, you know, living in Atlanta, I was like, I don't have to pay for tickets. I'll get a press pass. I'll sit front row of the press box, 50-yard line. And Miami got their ass kicked. And I left in the third quarter because I was so mad. And all the Georgia Tech beat writers were laughing because they all know I'm a Miami fan. And I couldn't stand there and just scream like I wanted to. So unless I'm working sidelines where I'm on the field, I will never go sit in the press box for a Miami game.
Yeah, I've covered one game in the press box, and it, you know, I really wish I was like in the orange lot tailgating, or I was in the west end zone. So I think I'll just stick to that, man.
Yeah, the tailgating, and even if you sit in the 300 level, it's better than sitting in the press box. You know, I was lucky all the years working with the Falcons. I'm down on the field, so I could cheer. I actually got some dirty looks because I've yelled at officials a few too many times when they made terrible calls. So I can only imagine if I was down there with Joe and Don Bailey Jr., I'd have to keep my mic off. I don't know how Josh does it down on the sidelines and it's nice and calm, because I would be too into the game, either yelling at the players, the coaches, or the referees, one or the other.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, John, thank you so much for coming on, brother. We love when you join the show. Whenever you want to come on, just let us know. Hope you and your family are staying safe out there, and we'll keep in touch, brother.
Anytime, guys. You know, you got my link. Just hit me up whenever you want. We could do this weekly, monthly, whatever you want to do. I'll always talk some Canes football with you. You guys be safe as well.
Hey, thanks, John. Right. You have a good one, bro.
See you guys.
Bye. Dude, he's a legend. What a legend.
Are you? I'm ready to do the Oklahoma drill.
Oh yeah, man. I'm so hyped. Like I wish that I was, you know, in the parking lot of a stadium going to see Miami FSU right now. I'd be ready to throw down. I'd be ready to trade hands with some FSU fans right now. I'm hyped.
The only time I met John was the Friday night before the Gator game in Orlando. There's like a big, huge party that Michael Irvin was putting. It was at a huge bar. And he comes like from like out of the corner, hits me in the chest, goes like, "You're Marsh, right?" I'm like, "Yes." "Yes, are you going to hurt me?"
Yeah.
Dude, he's that guy is like me when I'm 45 years old. I felt like I was just listening to my like my older self.
Yeah.
Ghost of Martin's future. Yeah. What a great episode so far. Holy hell.
Oh yeah. And it's just gonna get better, man. We got another great guest. So
you ready?
Should I patch in Jay?
Let's do it.
Okay. Jay, what's up, brother?
What's up? What's good, boss?
Yo, Jay, what's up, man? It's Marsh.
I'm chilling, man. I'm chilling.
All right. We got the legend. Jay, everyone knows him on Twitter. He's the biggest LeBron hater, probably on Earth. Jay came for.
Hold up, bro.
Hold on, I'm introducing you first. Yeah, one of my favorite people on Kane's Twitter. I'll never forget.
Oh my God.
When we were in Orlando last year, and I met Jay. He kept just telling me how tall I was. You remember that?
I remember that too. You're the tallest 6 foot person I know, bro. Like you at least 6'4".
I was dying. I was laughing so hard. How you doing, man? Thanks for coming on.
Man, I appreciate the invite. I'm chilling. I've been I just got in my new spot, so I've been organizing all day. Okay. But I was, you know what I'm saying, trying to make some time for this. Yeah. See what y'all got going. Hey, don't call me no LeBron hater, bro. I don't hate the dude. Like we got y'all got to chill on that already.
Okay. Jordan supporter then. You're a big Jordan supporter. Does that sound better?
I got a bone to pick with you, Jay. You kept me up all night last night, bro.
Bro, you were going. It was 5 o'clock in the morning here in Utah. What the hell?
Look, man. I told Jordan earlier. I gave him credit because usually Bron fans annoying. So he wasn't repetitive or whatever. So I'll give him credit for that. But if I get caught in one, bro, it don't matter what time of the day it is. I just gotta prove my point. I'm a Jordan supporter, but like I keep it real, bro. I keep it real. If Bron was the GOAT, I would have gave it to him.
Bro, how excited are you for The Last Dance to be over so you can, like, stop arguing with LeBron fans?
It's not going to stop. You saw it last night. What this little documentary is showing is who the GOAT really is and why he's the GOAT for all the people who didn't know. So all you about to hear from Bron fans is about his genes. You about to hear about, you know what I'm saying, his drinking habits, his casino stuff. It's going to be everything but basketball because they know now. That's what it is. They know now.
I don't know, man.
Oh, God.
It's coming. I can feel it. It's coming, dude.
I was ready to talk Canes. Y'all did this, so don't blame me.
It's all Mark's fault. Everyone blame Mark.
Okay. Let's talk Canes really quickly.
What y'all got?
Hey. Oh, now you got me upset that I didn't get a word in, but let's go.
Let's get the pain stuff out of the way first. Okay, so, Jay, it's been a hot topic on our show lately. Mike Rumpf. Like a few weeks ago, Jason Marshall didn't put us in. We just lost a cornerback target. He went to Auburn today, 4-star. What is your stance on Coach Mike Rumpf? Is it time for him to go? Is he on the hot seat, or are you one of the few and proud supporters of Mike Rumpf?
I'm not gonna say I'm on either side. I'm not as deep into it as everybody else. I have my opinions here and there, but from what I've seen, he is good at making the most out of what he does get. But if you're talking strictly recruiting, bro, like it speaks for itself at this point. I just feel like, you know what I'm saying, people said what they had to say. They had their opinions for the past few years, and you didn't do anything to change that. You know what I'm saying? So I got to call it like I see it. And if you're talking strictly recruiting, if we're trying to get to that next level, bro, like, you've shown us what you going to do. So either you got to change, you got to do something to change the opinions, but you can't have the rumor going and the opinions like out in the open and you're not doing nothing to change it. So I'm just going to say I call it like I see it.
I saw someone today put on Twitter, they're like, said something about, like, you know, Rumpf slander on the timeline, and it had some gif of like a meerkat or whatever, you know. And I just commented, I was like, at this point, any news, any recruiting news is Rumpf slander, whether it's intentional or not. Like, the dude is not doing himself any favors. So
I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, once it's out there, you got to do something to change it. Yeah. Like, when people started saying that LeBron was the GOAT, and then he goes 3-6 in the finals. You know what I'm saying? I'm just using that as an example. I ain't even trying to go there. Or when people said, you know what I'm saying, like, he wears a wig or whatever, and then it comes out that he really ain't got no hair. You know what I'm saying? So you just got to change that perception once it's out there. You know what I'm saying? I don't want to go down that conversation, but
what the hell?
Just as an example, you got to change the perception once it's out there. But we sticking to Canes. Go ahead, Marsh. Go ahead, Marsh. Next question, Marsh.
All right. Okay. Hold on, let me compose myself.
That was good. Hey, I like to use analogies, bro. I like to use analogies.
Yeah. I mean, Mike Rumpf, LeBron hairpiece. Yeah, I guess it works. But
hey, man, you gotta make it work.
I want to ask you two questions. First off, ESPNU, yesterday, all day, they were showing old Miami FSU games. Obviously, you're a diehard Cane. You know, you're very involved in Cane social media. Everyone knows that. Where does Miami FSU rank in terms of the best rivalries in college football?
We talking history or current history? Because I feel like that's two different conversations.
Yeah, I say current. Current.
Current, I feel like, personally, whether Miami is good or bad, people are watching. So we're always relevant. I don't care what no Florida or Florida State fans say, we're always going to be relevant. People are always watching. Florida State not doing anything is killing the rivalry right now. Not even talking about against us, but just in general. Now, we in that mid category right now. Don't get me wrong. I'm not going to even cap. But when at least one of us is good, the rivalry is good. Now, personally, this last game, bro, like, I went to that one. This is the third one I've been to in a row. Only three games I've ever been to for this rivalry.
Like, I remember how, like, depressed you were, like, going into the game, how you just didn't feel any hype.
That's what it felt like, bro. There was no trash talking before the game. Like, everybody was just like, we all suck, kumbaya. You know what I'm saying? Like, but for the game, for them not to show up in the game, that irritated me. Like, I'm a very competitive person. So if y'all have the better record or if we have the better record, I want to see two teams compete. Like, that's what made the rivalry what it was all these years. And I didn't see that from them. Like, win or lose, like, if y'all just not going to show up, you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't even want to watch it. Me being a Miami fan, watching us blow them out, I could not enjoy that game because they didn't show up.
And they didn't care.
Yeah. And you could feel it. And, like, so, I mean, if you're talking current history and we pulling out games like that, like, it wasn't even fun to watch, bro. So,
well, I mean, and, like, compare that to, like the hype that we were feeling the night before the Gator game in Orlando.
Yes, completely different. And that's still with us not having accomplished nothing, you know what I'm saying? So I genuinely believe that rivals bring something different and where the records really don't matter. But for whatever reason this year, they didn't bring anything. So I don't know. I can't put it up as high as I would like it to be, as high as I felt that it's been in the past, because something changed. I don't know what it is. Something changed.
Yeah. No, I think you're right, though. I there's something to be said about Florida State needing to pull their weight. I 100% like agree with what you said about, you know, Miami's always relevant no matter what we're doing. You know, people are always watching specials and stuff.
Yeah.
And really, Florida and Florida State just try to tell us that we're not relevant because, like, we're a threat to them, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Kind of how, like, you know, MJ always applauds Kobe, but he's always taking shots at LeBron because he's scared of him.
I think MJ just is a real person, bro. Like, he's honest. LeBron had his shot, bro.
No, I think he's really threatened by the legacy that LeBron can put
together. He's not, bro. And the man is 3-6, bro. Marsh, when I get off, I want 3-6 Mafia playing, bro. Play 3-6 Mafia when y'all kick me off of here.
Oh, dude, I'm the one that controls the music, so we'll find
Jordan. Something. Play 3-6 Mafia serious. When I get off here.
3-6 Mafia on my, I got it on tap.
Oh man.
Go to your iTunes if you got to. I want 3-6 Mafia playing when I get off.
Yeah.
All right, I got you. Okay, next question I got for you. Okay, so the NFL draft, it was probably like close to a month ago. I think it was four Canes that were drafted, three signed as undrafted free agents. Who do you see having the biggest impact for their team?
That's a tough one, man. I will say this. I don't know if I can answer your question directly, but I do like the whole Seahawks situation, bro. I had a lot of respect for the way all that happened and, you know what I'm saying, just the way it went down and DJ being able to play with Homer again. I think that's just, you know what I'm saying, image-wise, that's great for the program. And I obviously, my opinion of DJ is pretty high. I'll keep that on Twitter for everybody to see, but the way he led our team this year, the way he was like, you know, the heartbeat of the offense and the most consistent player, in my personal opinion, on that side of the ball, like, I like that he's getting an opportunity because I didn't know how that was going to go with just the way the season went, you know what I'm saying? So with the way that I think they'll run the ball, I'm looking forward to that down the road.
Okay. Jordan, what about you? Who do you think has the biggest impact as a rookie?
I don't know, man. I think DJ is going to be a little buried. I mean, I think the Seahawks still have Chris Carson and they have Rashad Penny. I don't know. I love KJ. I just love everything about KJ, his work ethic. I know they also drafted Justin Jefferson, the Vikings. But dude, KJ is just one of those guys that I'm just not sure you can keep him down, you know? He wasn't recruited, so he went to Buffalo, and then, you know, then he turned it into Miami, and then he turned that into being drafted. And so, like, I'm never betting against KJ. If I had to bet on one of these guys being a breakout player, it's probably him.
Yeah, he's got that dog mentality. I love it about KJ.
The work ethic, man.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, he's a workhorse, bro.
Like, he gets it. He gets it. I don't even mean to cut you off, Mark, but I will. I do got to speak that on KJ. The first day he got here, he showed who he really was just by, you know what I'm saying, the extra time that he was putting in and everything to be example for other people, kind of like what Mike did in Chicago. But, I mean, you really need a leader like that who knows what it takes to get there, and I feel like KJ is that guy as opposed to somebody who don't really pull his teammates along, you know what I'm saying? But go ahead. You were saying?
No, I was I think, and people are going to moan and groan, my breakout rookie is Jeff Thomas.
I think rookie season or just the rookie?
Impact in general. I think New England was the best place that he could go. I think Belichick is going to work with him. And, I mean, you make one slip up in New England, you're out. Like, look at that. Ryan, he was there for a week.
I mean, I get what you're saying, but because of that, I think Jeff Thomas is going to get cut before the end of the season in New England.
Do you think he makes the 53?
I don't know, but I just don't think he can exist on that team. He just doesn't. I mean, I think that was the worst place he could have gone just because, like you said, you know, I think, I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. You know, you could be right that, like, Belichick could be a guy that inspires Jeff Thomas to turn things around. But, like, from what I know about him, it doesn't seem like a strict environment was a great place. But I could be wrong. You know, I've never met Jeff, so.
Yeah, I'm 50-50 on that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it could either go either way. I mean, it could either work like it did with Randy Moss, or he'll be like Albert Haynesworth with the Patriots.
Let me ask y'all a quick question. As far as Jeff Thomas is concerned, I have a personal opinion on him that I talk about in the group chat a lot because we go back and forth about Jeff. I think that what we saw was not necessarily his character. I feel like that was the result of something. You know what I'm saying? Like, the situation he thought he was getting himself into, he realized it wasn't that. He tried to leave. We made him promises in Miami. On Miami's end, we didn't really keep it. You know what I'm saying? On what we told him we was going to get, or what we told him we was going to give him. So the opportunities were there. We didn't make the most of his opportunities for him. And I think that that's what started to show up. Because early season, every year, he was there. He was ready. You know what I mean? But then as the season tailed on And I felt like he's seeing his NFL potential or his draft potential or whatever going down because of how the season's going. And I think he just emotionally took that worse than he probably should have. I don't know what you guys think about that.
No, it you know, I'm a huge fan of Jeff Thomas's talent.
Same.
I love watching him play football, but unfortunately, you hate to say it, but it wasn't a good fit him at Miami. Like, I mean, when he has that much, you know, going on off the field issues, like, you know that it just wasn't going to work. And it really is a shame because talent wise, there's no way in hell he shouldn't have been or he should have been drafted. Like, there's no way that he should not have been drafted for how talented he is. And so, I mean, you go from I'm going to say toxic situation, like back in December after the Louisiana Tech game and the FIU game, that Miami, the University of Miami was a toxic situation. Mm-hmm. Like, that was just a depressing and negative. You go to a place like New England where all they know is winning. They know discipline. I mean, you know, like, year after year, you are going to be competing and you are going to be around players that, frankly, give a shit. I mean, no offense to the Canes. We love the Canes, but it's the complete opposite, you know, situation like the University of Miami. And I think he can emerge as a punt return guy. I think he could go in the slot. But I'm a big – I think I'm – yeah, I'm going with JT4, man.
Okay.
It's not a bad pick, bro. It's not a bad pick.
So for my answer on that, like I said, you know, I can't really speak to his character. I will say, though, like, one thing that would have me going against that idea – well, two things. One, there was a lot of chatter about him before he even enrolled in Miami, about some character concerns and stuff that was going on, you know, when he was going to high school in St. Louis. You know, there was some worry about that, and I wasn't an expert on the issue, but I know it was there. And then also, like, I kind of feel like his draft stock was at an all-time high when he got kicked off the team. I mean, we had just played that Virginia Tech game. He had that incredible punt return for a touchdown. I mean, I know I personally was shooting out, you know, text messages and highlight reels of Jeff Thomas to all my friends left and right. I was like, we got our next Devin Hester, you know, first-round pick. And 3 days later, he's kicked off the team. So I don't know. I can't speak to him, you know, on a personal level. But I actually felt like things were going the best that they had in his career when he got kicked off the team. So I don't know.
Yeah. It just sucks, man. It just sucks because, I mean, they didn't utilize him either. They didn't get him the ball. Like, Dan Eno said he was going to get the ball 10 to 15 times a game. He was lucky.
That's what I'm talking about, bro. That exactly. Right there. Like, We've done that every year and didn't come through. You know what I'm saying? We're not talking about a running back. You handed the ball. We're talking about a receiver who's burning this man by 10, 15 yards. Yeah. And the quarterback can't get him the ball. And then the other opportunities that we promised him, whether it be reverse screen, whatever, we didn't do what we said we were going to do. So I think that as a receiver specifically, like, you talk about somebody like Randy Moss. You get Randy Moss and don't give him the ball, you're not going to get a good result. You know what I mean? But that's just how I took it because of the position and everything.
Yeah, no, I can definitely see where you're coming from there. And, you know, if someone with inside info told me that's exactly what happened, I wouldn't be surprised. So
yeah, I do agree with the stuff about him before he got here, though. Like, I am aware of all that. Don't get me wrong.
And it also just goes to show you that it wasn't all his fault, man. Like, Miami, like, they didn't – I don't know. I feel like they just didn't do enough for him. I wasn't in the Heck Center, and, you know, I wasn't there, but I just feel like it just wasn't a good fit, and he wasn't a fit for the Hurricanes, and the coaches and him obviously had something going on, but whatever. That's a depressing subject. Jay, I want to ask you this. Hey, so 2020, it is a make or break year for the Canes and for Manny Diaz. First question, how are you feeling about Manny Diaz after last year and also this offseason?
My personal opinion, I am not worried about Manny one bit. I never have been. I know what he signed up for, and I don't think that the fans really understood what he signed up for. Now, I don't talk to a lot of players. I ain't no insider or anything. I do have that little group chat where I talk to a few players every now and then, and, I mean, it's pretty evident that it was a lot more player issues than people wanted to admit. So with the way that the team is built right now, I think that since – 2010, maybe. I can't remember when it was, but the last time we've had a good offensive coordinator who can run a system that fits us with a good defensive coordinator at the same time that fits us. We haven't had that. That's all we've been missing. Every year it's been one side of the ball balling and one side that's just completely lost. You know what I'm saying? And for the first time, I don't feel like we'll have that. Lastly, first year could be an issue, you know what I'm saying, just the getting used to everything. But outside of that, I have zero concerns. I also believe that even last year, with all the problems we've had, I'll say last 3 years, with all the problems we've had, the quarterback problems, every game that our quarterback showed up, we looked like a good team. So now we have a quarterback that we're expecting to show up every week, so I'm not worried about it. You know what I'm saying? That's just my perception. Whether it was Williams, Cozy, or Rozier, it didn't matter. Whoever the quarterback was, when they showed up, the team showed up. So I'm confident that King is going to be the difference just in consistency.
Okay. Now I got a good one. Okay, 2021, who is our starting quarterback? And I know what you're going to say. Who's our
starting quarterback? So we talking Bama.
We're talking Bama. Doesn't matter if we're talking Bama or FAMU.
I think it does. I think it does.
Say it.
I'm gonna say Cozy, man.
No!
Look, the only reason why I'm saying that, I think that he hasn't had necessarily a good example yet. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think that having a peer who can lead you is different from having a coach who can teach you. I think that's two completely different things. I don't think he's had somebody around him to show him the ropes. He's been told the ropes over and over. Mark Rich is good at teaching people, but he usually has an older guy who can show the next guy something. You know what I mean? And I don't feel like Cozy's had that. And I think that this year he has the opportunity to learn from somebody who's seen it, who gets it, who has the experience, who knows what it takes in the film room, who knows what it takes as the extra work in the quarterback room. Like, he hasn't had that example yet. So I think going into his senior season, I think that's his senior or junior, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. I think that experience, the whole 2020 season, just being around King enough will make a different Cozy that we've seen. And then you're adding Lashley's offense to that. So I think he's going to get a shot to make his career worth it.
I totally, totally agree with you. You know I'm part of the Cozy hive. I've kind of accepted that Tate Martell is not the guy. And I've always been a fan of Cozy, man. Like, I was there when he came back against Florida State. I was at this past Virginia Tech game where he threw for 400 yards. Like, Cozy has the talent. And I just had to ask because I know you and Cam are presidents.
I wouldn't say I'm in that one, man. I'm not, like, I don't like standing for anybody. Whoever it is. I don't like being a stand and saying, no matter what, I'm all right with this dude. I've seen enough in Cozy just in our quarterback room to give me confidence. And that's why I said what I said about Cozy. But if somebody's better than Cozy, I'm handing it to him. Like, I'm not set on no guy. I thought that was going to be Williams at the beginning of the year, because when I went to the spring game, his first spring game, I saw his accuracy. I didn't know what his vision was like. I didn't know what his pocket presence was like. I didn't know about none of that, but I saw the accuracy. So I wanted to see the accuracy in action. I did, and saw that was all that was really there. So that's when I was saying it was time to move on. But with Cozy, I have seen enough personally to say, in a better system, with more consistency around him, a little more time in the pocket, I think he can succeed here.
I'm not against that, but I mean, I would, my confidence would be a little bit shaken if he was announced as the starter. I just, you know, I mean, you could be right, because he's built for a spread system, right? So Lashley might be like the key to unlocking his potential, and that's fine. You know, I'll support whoever's named the starter. I'm not gonna like cry about it or whatever, but you know, I just, until Cozy proves me wrong, I kind of feel like we've seen his best days, and I would really love for Tyler Van Dyke to steal that job away and like be a clear cut starter come game day for Bama.
I wouldn't be mad at that, bro.
That's probably what would make me the most confident going into that Bama game, is if like we get a Tyler Van Dyke is the starter announcement in like April. You know, like after the spring games, we're like, oh, we're pretty confident. Like, Tyler Van Dyke is our dude. He's going to be running with the number ones heading into, you know, fall camp and all of the Bama prep. That's what would make me the happiest, honestly.
Bro, I just don't get how I mean, like, go back to 2018. Cozy balls out against FIU, then he comes back again, or balls out against UNC, comes back against FSU. Then he, like, collapses against Virginia. Rozier comes back in. And then this past year, he plays well against Virginia Tech, almost brings us back. He beats Virginia, and then we go to Pittsburgh. Jay, I remember your tweets during that game. Like, well, why hasn't he been able to, like, just be consistent? I don't get it, because when you, like, there are times when Cozy makes throws, you're like, damn, like, this guy can, like, be our guy. Like, this is the guy we've been waiting for. And then when he played against Pitt, that was one of the worst performances I've ever seen by a quarterback.
I'm still looking at the system, bro. You can't, when it comes to college, you can't take the system out of the equation. Now, if we just added King this year, we still got Enos, we still got the same everything else. I'm nowhere near as confident even with King, with all that King's proved. You know what I'm saying? But I think that the system makes a difference when you're talking about a certain player with a certain style. You know what I mean? Like, you could plug certain guys in who fit in better places. I see that in the NBA a lot. Where a guy isn't as productive, he goes to another team that has a better system that fits him, and all of a sudden he's averaging, you know what I'm saying, 15, 20. You know what I mean? So I think that system is the biggest difference from where we were to where we are now. You're not going to – I don't think that somebody – like, if we had got Hurts last year, we talked about that in offseason. It was a chance of it. If we get Hurts in that same system, is Hurts going to win 10, 12 games? I don't think so. I think the system was that bad. With that fit, and then you still got the same players around them. You know what I'm saying? Like, the situation still got to work in order for the wins. So if we're talking about Cozy in the future, I'm looking at more than just Cozy. I'm looking at the stuff around him.
Yeah, and I definitely see what you're saying there. My issue with Cozy is more like what Marsh was talking about, you know, how he'll play good, and then he plays like crap, and then he plays good, and then like crap. To me, that's a confidence issue, and I could be wrong. That's just a diagnosis I'm going to give it. I think, you know, the quarterback position relies so much on confidence and, like, the mental side of the game that not everyone can do it. You know, and that's kind of why I don't really want to see Cozy as the starter. It's just I feel like if his issues have been confidence driven, which is again what I'm thinking, I don't think Rhett Lashley is going to fix that. I think his system could make him more efficient. It could make him better. But I mean, if it's a confidence thing, then he's still going to have games where he unravels. And, you know, I don't really want to have another season where, you know, we beat some good teams and then unravel against four teams that we should have beat. I mean, that's classic Kane stuff, you know, at least in my lifetime.
Well, do you think that his confidence is the issue because of what you've seen as the result, or you've actually looked at Cozy and said, I don't see confidence? Because I've always felt like that I have seen the confidence.
So it's more the result. I mean, because I don't know a ton about him as a person. Mm. I do have to say that his off the field issues as a freshman have affected that. You know, I worry about his focus and where his head is. I do want to give him some credit, because I know he kind of became like the leader in the locker room in terms of the quarterback room this season. Mm-hmm.
He has come a long way from where he was a few years ago.
Yeah, so I want to give him all the credit in the world for doing that. You know, going from all this controversy as a freshman and then, you know, kind of becoming like the leader in the QB room. So props to Cozy there. Like, if he keeps that kind of stuff up, then, you know, I think he could have some cool stuff ahead of him. But overall, like, the overall body of work just doesn't make me feel like he has the makeup of an extremely successful QB, at least, you know, like the mental, emotional makeup, if that makes sense.
I got you.
But I hope I'm wrong. You know, if he balls out with Rhett Lashley, I'm all about it. I'm rooting for Cozy, because, like I said, I love a good turnaround story. I love the fact that he changed stuff up and became a leader. So if he turns that into being a starter and winning 10 games for us, like, I'll be hyped.
Agree.
So, let's see. I'm out of questions, Marsh. Do you have anything left?
I'm just waiting for you guys to start arguing.
I don't think nobody want to sit through another hour of this. We did most of it last night. I get repetitive after a while.
Yeah, dude.
I don't want y'all to see that.
I'm ready for fireworks on Twitter tonight.
Hey, look, man, we did them all last night at 5 in the morning, bro. You got to wait at least 2 days.
Damn. Yeah, let's have you back on in like 2 weeks after the next MJ episode or whenever, a week and a half or whatever. When that comes back on, then maybe I'll be rejuvenated. Ready to argue. But I've been blowing up all day. What was that?
I said let's get you on again soon, okay?
I'll make time, bro. I'll make time. This quarantine gave me more time. I really should have been on already. I just want to think about it.
All right, brother. Hey.
But I got y'all for sure, man. Appreciate the invite.
Absolutely. Yeah, thanks, Jay. Appreciate you coming on, brother.
All right, y'all have a good one, man.
Okay. Thanks, you too. All right.
I played 6 Mafia for him, and he didn't even notice.
Well, it's because I booted him off before you could hear it.
Oh, what a great episode. I knew it was going to be good.
Yeah.
Jay's awesome.
Oh, yeah, dude.
Two minutes into it, he's relating Mike Rumpf and LeBron's hairpiece. It's classic.
Dude, I did not have the stamina nor the gumption to deal with that right now. I'm hungry. I'm tired because I was up all night dealing with people trolling me. And, it's an emotional roller coaster because I'm also ready to run through a wall for John Michaels. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
Why isn't that guy why isn't he coaching somewhere and firing people up?
Why isn't he like a drill instructor?
Yeah, or just like giving motivational speeches to the Hurricanes before they play FSU.
You know, that's what some people say about me, Jordan.
Well, dude, if you can bring that kind of heat, then you deserve it.
I'll march right up to freaking Nesta and Greg Rousseau and say, I don't know what I'll say, but.
Yeah, you'll look up into their eyes.
Yeah, I'll look into their soul.
Yep, and point your finger right in their chest and say, hey, try to play good today.
Or you're out. Or you're fired. Yeah. Hey, great episode, man. That was honestly top 2 of my favorite episodes ever. That was awesome.
Oh, yeah, dude, it was incredible.
Good deal. Okay, we will see you guys next week. Thank you to John Michaels and to Tito and to Jay. We'll have you guys on again, and thank you all. Thank all you guys for listening. We love you.
Yeah.
Jordan, anything else?
No, man. Just everyone stay safe and go Canes.
Go Canes, baby.